From National Public Radio, it's Latino USA.
This is our cardio workout. We're going to start by marching with our left foot. ¿Listos? ¡Márchalo!
Getting in shape, losing those extra pounds gained over the winter, while for some it's possible. But for many people, including Latinos, the problem is more than just a few extra pounds. Increasingly, nationwide, the problem is obesity.
We need a social movement around health, the same way we've had a civil rights movement, a women's rights movement.
Why are Latinos not heeding the call for healthy change? This week, we examine obesity in the Latino community. And from Chile, a sample of the music of DJ Bitman. I'm Maria Hinojosa. No se vayan.
This is news from Latino USA. I'm Ray Suarez. Michigan and Florida violated Democratic Party rules by holding their primaries in January. Now party officials are negotiating a possible primary do-over. Joining us to discuss this is Univision's national news anchor, Maria Elena Salinas. Hi, Maria.
Hello, Ray. Nice to talk to you.
So when these two states violated the rules, they were stripped of their delegates. And I guess back in 2007 when this happened, few people imagined that we'd get to the fix that we're in now, a tiny margin separating the two main contenders, Senators Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. Now, people are trying to figure out how to count those delegates. I understand Florida is moving full steam ahead with a mail-in system?
They're not necessarily moving full steam ahead, but they are promoting the idea and they're lobbying very hard for it. As a matter of fact, the recent poll shows a 2-1 margin. Florida voters do want to have a do-over campaign by mail-in. But, you know, one thing where you have to remember, Democratic voters in Florida, Hispanic or non-Hispanics, were very disappointed that their votes wouldn't be counted. But, you know, this election is turning out to be so much more interesting and voters are really fired up. This time it's hard to tell if there is going to be a do-over campaign or not because it's all being negotiated behind closed doors. The Obama campaign says you should follow the rules and things should stay as they are. But of course, you know, he's ahead of the game right now. Recently, Hillary Clinton, in a speech to the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, said that there should be two options, either honor the results or hold that new primary election.
The Latino vote has been so important in these various primaries, sometimes providing Hillary Clinton with her entire margin of victory. How does it look in Florida if there was a regular primary election held tomorrow? Would she gain the same kind of support she did elsewhere in the country?
It's possible. As far as Hispanics are concerned, Hillary did receive 59% of the Latino vote here in Florida. Obama received 30%. We know that there's been a big change in the support that Senator Barack Obama has received since January and February. It has increased. But overall, it seems a lot of Hispanic voters are staying loyal to Senator Hillary Clinton. So the Hispanic vote would definitely continue to play a role that is very important in the state of Florida. And that is probably one of the reasons why she is open to the possibility of a do-over election, because she is confident that she could win with the Hispanic vote here.
Let's turn to Michigan. It's a working-class industrial state and one whose demographics favor Hillary Clinton. Now, Barack Obama's name wasn't even on the January ballot when Michigan went ahead with its voting. If they don't have a do-over, how can their delegates be counted?
Well, again, you know, that's a decision that has to be made by the Democratic Party leaders in Washington. The governors of both Michigan and Florida have been lobbying hard to get the votes of their constituents counted and basically say that big party bosses in Washington need to respect the voice of millions of voters. Now, there's 156 delegates at stake in Michigan. There's 210 delegates at stake in Florida. But, Ray, the interesting thing about this, neither one of them can reach the magic number, including the results of these two states and including the results of all of the primaries that are left in this season.
Moving on to another politically related story. In what some are calling election year politics, Republicans are pushing a series of stiff immigration bills. Maria Elena, what's the strategy in pushing these bills?
Well, they're being fueled by anti-immigrant groups like FAIR and Minutemen. They function very well through phone and radio and emails and faxes, asking their supporters to lobby Congress so that they speed up and accelerate the passage of some of this legislation. And there are several bills. I believe there's about 15 bills that have been presented recently designed to stiffen immigration laws. There's one that's proposing to block federal funding to cities that bar their police from asking about immigration status. And remember that a lot of police departments were hesitant to do that because they feel immigrants would not be reporting crimes either as witnesses or as victims. And I think the hardliners realize whoever wins the next election, whether it be a Democrat or a Republican, would be supportive of the idea of an immigration reform that would include the legalization of undocumented immigrants. So I think that they're beginning to realize this election might change their strategy for making immigration laws harder.
Well, thanks, Maria Elena. Good to talk to you.
Well, nice to talk to you too, Ray.
Maria Elena Salinas is a syndicated columnist and national news anchor for Univision, the Spanish-language television network. For Latino USA, I'm Ray Suarez.
It's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Time is money. It sounds cliche, right? Well, for most Americans, it's all too true, especially for working-class families. It's so tempting to simply buy a pizza or pick up a bucket of fried chicken rather than to prepare that healthy home-cooked meal, especially after a long day of work. And it's showing, particularly in the Latino community. Here to discuss obesity and its effects on Latinos are Dr. Robert Anders and Dr. Hector Balcazar, co-directors of the Hispanic Health Disparities Research Center in El Paso, Texas. Welcome to Latino USA, doctors.
Thank you.
Thank you. We're glad to be here.
The disparities in terms of Latinos and their health are so big that essentially you've got an entire center. That's devastating to know that in modern-day America that we can have such severe health disparities, isn't it?
It's quite an alarming issue. I think probably, in my estimation, it's something we're just becoming more and more aware of. It's probably existed for a number of years, but given whatever reason, social, political, economic, the disparities issues were not at the forefront. And thankfully, in the last at least 5 to 6 years, particularly with some of the federal government funding, there's now interest in minority disparities, particularly Hispanics, which are, as you know, very underserved.
So what is the state of Latino health right now?
Some good news is that we know that the Latino population does have better health outcomes in certain areas. For example, in prenatal care, often there may not be care, but the birth outcomes are better than the majority population. We also know, on the other hand, that the incidence of breast cancer, for example, is low among Latino women, as cervical cancer. The negative on that, however, is that these women do not access early detection, in terms of preventive mammograms and pap smears and things like that. So the mortality rates are higher. So that's an issue, obviously, we got to take care of. But from a physiological perspective, we know that they have a healthier outcome if they're detected earlier than in the majority population.
So what about obesity? What is it about Latinos living in this country that make them tend to have this problem of obesity?
Well, obesity in Latinos is somewhat similar to some of the rates of obesity that you see in other minority communities. But what is interesting is the issue of the acculturation and some of the changes that exist when people come from Mexico and other parts of Latin America and Central America with perhaps less obesity. And as they stay in the U.S., they begin to increase the rates of obesity, diabetes. And I think that is a complex issue because it is associated with sometimes issues of socioeconomic conditions, lack of access to care, changes in their dietary patterns, changes in their work patterns, changes in their physical activity patterns, which all seem to be important in addressing this important epidemic. So Latinos, we have a great opportunity because Latinos are very heterogeneous, are coming from many different parts, have different kinds of acculturation patterns. We have a great emerging population of foreign-born. Almost 30% of the population in the U.S. are foreign-born. So that provides us an opportunity to look at some of these trends in changes in obesity, diabetes in adults and in children.
Is it because in our communities, in low-income communities, working-class communities, it's harder to access healthy foods? You have a preponderance of bodegas that sell kind of, you know, high-fat, high-calorie, high-sugar content. Is it that?
Given this complex issue, we have to find complex solutions to the study of obesity in Latinos because we understand that there are so many different forces that may affect a child to have a high access to sugary foods, low exercise in schools, perhaps no capacity for the family to perhaps do some meal preparation at home, lack of social support, lack of networking. And then if you couple that with sometimes you see tomatoes not available, available fresh fruits, you see more issues more available than fresh fruits. And then even when they are there, they might be more expensive. So it becomes like an important environmental, ecological approach to obesity, where we can begin to look at schools and interventions at different levels.
Dr. Robert Anders and Dr. Hector Balcazar are co-directors at the Hispanic Health Disparities Research Center in El Paso, Texas. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Maria.
Bye-bye.
Gone are the days when you can look at children and think they can get away with eating anything. I should know. I'm a mother of two. Educators and parents are taking a good look at children's widening waistlines, and they're discovering adult-sized health problems. In Austin, Texas, Youth Interactive tackles this issue by working with local schools to teach children the basics about nutrition and to give them the power to bring about change at home. Latino USA's Angela Maldonado has our story.
It's 4:30 in the afternoon at Allen Elementary School on Austin's east side. The bustle of the school day is over, but for a group of children, they still have one more lesson to learn.
Pasta.
No. Vegetable.
Banana.
This is part of an after-school program from Austin-based organization Youth Interactive, and it mixes play and education to teach children the importance of healthy living.
Our main focus is to fight childhood obesity. We're doing that by trying to empower kids to be the change agents at home.
That's Socorro Valdez, Outreach Coordinator for Youth Interactive.
I mean, you can see it. If you go in some of the schools, I know some of the schools that I've taught, there's kids that have type 2 diabetes. They come with Cheetos, you know, and it's those kids that don't know or their parents aren't aware of, you know, how that's impacting their lives.
Kids participate in the twice-weekly, hour-long sessions throughout the school year. They learn the basics of nutrition, such as what's a calorie, what are fats, how to read a nutrition label. Since 2004, Youth Interactive has been working with state agencies and local organizations to get kids excited about making lifestyle changes for themselves and family.
What we try to do with our programs is say, look, you know, this is not about you going in and criticizing your family or criticizing your parents.
Baker Harrell, Youth Interactive founder and executive director.
It's more about saying to your parents, hey, this is really important to me, to our family. And, you know, you have the opportunity to educate your parents because they may not know, but you have to do it in a respectful way.
Harold speaks from experience. As a young kid growing up in Canton, Mississippi, he was an overweight child. And one summer, with the help of his family, he lost almost 30 pounds.
And what I learned was I could, as a young person, become a change agent not only in my own life, but in the life of my family because my whole family started eating differently. So we started eating healthy food. My whole family started becoming more active.
Justine Kaplan is the program coordinator for Steps to a Healthier Austin. She says Youth Interactive reaches out to mainly low-income communities and teaches kids that small changes over time can have big results in the future.
If you're someone who lives in a low-income neighborhood that's inundated with fast food, that there is no grocery store, and that you're on a limited income and you're working two jobs, I need to give a better message than just eat better. I need to tell you how to do that given your situation. I mean, that's our challenge, and that's what drives us every day.
Back in the gym at Allen Elementary, Youth Interactive instructor Jenna De La Rosa just finished a tag game.
I guess the main thing that I enjoy most is having them rely it back to their family. I think that's really important because I don't think that some of the families are educated on some of the stuff that we teach them here. So I think if we like really instill it to them here, it's easier for them to take it back home.
Baker Harrell.
There's a lack of really understanding youth and applying youth marketing and youth media and youth culture principles to this issue. We need a social movement around health, the same way we've had a civil rights movement, a women's rights movement. One of our sort of core principles is every child needs to be healthy and active. Every child needs to eat nutritious food. Every child deserves a chance to live a healthy lifestyle.
In the end, though, it's still teaching kids to choose between foods such as the popular hot Cheetos and the not-so-fun fruits and vegetables. So I asked Socorro Valdez, how do you get kids to get excited about that?
Just because they hear other kids say, ooh, broccoli, that's gross. But if you talk to them about it and be like, okay, well, have you tried it? And some of the kids are like, no. Then we tell them, we'll go home and try it and tell me what you think.
For Latino USA, I'm Angela Maldonado in Austin, Texas.
And now, permítame que les cuente algo personal sobre my own experience with health and movement. I used to dance a lot. There was something, well, there is something in dance that has made me feel unbridled in a very physical way, and I have loved it. On Sundays, when my dad would put Los Panchos on the record player, I would sway and twirl and dream. My first dance classes were ballet when I was 7, taught in the basement of a hippie mall in my neighborhood in Chicago. My favorite ballet was Peter and the Wolf. The fact is that I've been moving my entire life. I try to think back on how and why I learned this, and I can't point to any one thing. I've never felt like a jock, but looking back, it's as if there was an organic understanding in my family about engaging your body. If we had a picnic, there was badminton. If there was a party, we would dance. We weren't sports people, but then again, my entire family got up and water skied together, all 6 of us, on the shores of Lake Michigan. Nowadays, if it weren't for exercise, I simply would not be able to function. I was running the morning of September 11th, and in a lot of ways, I haven't stopped running since. And I have a soundtrack for my runs, definitely Juan Luis Guerra.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Yo escuchaba el otro día una emisora radial, un psiquiatra, Dr. Luis, daba consejo matrimonial.
Marqué 3-5-5-9-4-11-85.
Hey, Doc, te llamo por una amiga que conocí en un website.
Le pido que me dé solución.
Exercise has become an urgent part of my daily existence. The way I see it, you have to make exercise like breathing. Try not to think about it too much, but make the effort to make it happen. I want to feel alive and hopeful. I want to feel the rhythm deep in my soul. I want to know que estoy viva and that a human body propelling itself forward is a thing of great strength, and that can make me feel unstoppable, if only for 10 minutes. But who's watching the clock when you got a great beat? In a minute, sampling the sounds of South America, la música de DJ Bitman, coming up on Latino USA. Quédense con nosotros.
Me gusta la salsa y la chaparrita.
You're listening to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. According to musicologist Ned Sublett, there are two human universals, language and song. But always there's been the use of acoustic instruments. Until now, many musicians are using their computers, and with samples, they can create a whole new sound.
That's right. Press the M key, and you'll see what I mean. Press M. M.
José Antonio Bravo is one such musician. Based in Santiago, Chile, Bravo, better known as DJ Bitman, has just released a new album, Latin Bitman. It's risen to the top of the charts in South America. Joined now by DJ Bitman from Santiago, Chile. Welcome to Latino USA.
Thanks for having me.
So, first of all, for our listeners, I mean, the music is great. It's fun. It's soothing. It took me a lots of different places, but I don't know what sampling is. I mean, I kind of have an idea, but what exactly is sampling? And how do we hear it on this CD of yours?
It's to take a piece of one song from other musician and put it in your songs and use it like a loop. It's just to give some color to your song. If I want to get closer to samba or bossa nova or funk, jazz, you know, use a sample and then make my own song with that color, that feeling.
Bitman, there's a great moment in the song Troppi Love. I just wrote in huge letters, big dub. I mean, it's like an incredible dub song. At least I immediately got into the rhythm.
That's the first single right here in Chile, and we have our video on MTV.
No kidding, that must be so cool for you.
Yeah, here in Chile we have on the top of the charts only pop musicians, pop artists. So for a DJ like me, it's not easy to, it's so hard to get in the main line of the artists.
When a song like Troppi Love is such a big hit, what does it say to you about the young people in Chile and what they're looking for at this moment?
Well, there's a lot of cultures right here in Chile, but there's a big hip-hop scene or reggaeton, and there's other that like pop rock from the U.S., you know, like My Chemical Romance and all that. So it's a little of everything.
Touch the sun only with my fingertips. Don't you put your whole body down. You might burn all you got. You better save something for tomorrow. Touch the sun only with your fingertips.
Bitman, one last question. How do you, the people in Chile, I mean your friends, people who you know, obviously you can't speak for the entire country, but when you guys look to the United States, in terms of music and culture and even politics right now, because we're in the middle of a presidential election and you have the first female president ever in Chile. But from your perspective, what does the North look like?
The United States means to me a lot of doors that I have open as soon as possible. It's nothing negative on my vision of the United States. I like a lot the country. I like the people. I love really the people that's working with me in this album, and I have family there. I have cousins, and I've been there like 5 times in my life, and I'm very thankful for what the American market is telling me and the media and all that. So to me, it's a big country and a great country and a friend.
Thank you so much for joining us on Latino USA, DJ Bitman.
Okay, thank you,
Felicidades, gracias.
Muchas gracias. Chao, chao.
José Antonio Bravo is DJ Bitman. His latest album, Latin Bitman, is available from Nacional Records. And now some comments from you, our listeners. From my interview with journalist and author Paul Cuadros, Dan from Albuquerque, New Mexico, wrote in to say, "Your soccer coach should have seen the contradiction in his own situation. When you play a sport, you're agreeing to play by the rules, including being eligible, which the illegal aliens are not." Also last week, in my essay, I asked the question, how does it change you as an American to know that there are some living in fear in our country, in fear of something as simple as gathering in groups? This listener from Los Angeles called in with this.
There are perhaps two positive sides to the story regarding the teenager who could not take the folklorica class, or one, to attempt to address the underlying problem, which is being in the United States illegally, and two, that perhaps it would lead to greater assimilation in terms of taking classes where other students are U.S. citizens. I mean, it is unfortunate that that particular class, out of fear that that teenager will not be attending it, but I think the underlying problems need to be looked at, the number one being this person is here illegally or undocumented.
And Alex from San Antonio had this to say.
Yeah, the comment about, you know, Mexican-Americans and, you know, undocumented workers being fearful to get together in large groups to trigger a raid is, you know, it's horrible. You know, people should be feel free to gather in groups and pass culture and language and tradition together without being afraid of being deported. It's just really pathetic and sad. I'm upset by that a great deal, and it shouldn't be that way. This is America. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
So let's keep the dialogue going. As Harley from Chicago writes, "Thank you for inviting a dialogue. I always hear stories on the news that I feel some mixture of emotion for, but I never have the chance to sort it out by engaging in dialogue. If anything," continues Harley, "now my definition of American is constantly shifting, changing, and increasing in complexity, and firmly set in the people who live here now and who want to live here and who will live here in the future, and how they will interpret their Americanness." Thank you, Harley, and thank you all who sent us messages. Let's keep the dialogue going. The Latino USA listener line is 800-535-5533. Our email address is lusa@npr.org. Production support for Latino USA comes from KUT Radio, the Center for Mexican American Studies, the University of Texas at Austin, and the William and Salome Scanlon Foundation of Austin and San Antonio. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Join us again next week for NPR's Latino USA.
Support for NPR comes from the Doris Duke Charitable Foundation, celebrating 10 years of support for the performing arts, environmental conservation, medical research, and the prevention of child abuse. Lumber Liquidators, hardwood, bamboo, and cork flooring. Catalog at 1-800-FLOORING. And the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, committed to helping Americans lead healthier lives and get the care they need. On the web at rwjf.org. This is NPR, National Public Radio.